Hello, everyone, and welcome to Uncork the Sun with the Vinstitute Wine School. I'm your host, Moss Sherkogel, and my first name spelled backwards is Somm. You think that's a coincidence? Since we've started this podcast, we've talked about a lot of the generalities of how grapes are grown, how wine is made, and how it can be appreciated. But all of those broad strokes, I think in a lot of ways, fail to capture what is so fascinating and unique about wine. What I mean is that every individual grape varietal in winemaking is in its own way so distinct and specific that if you're making a wine out of Merlot grapes and you're making a wine out of Chardonnay grapes, you may as well be making two completely discrete types of alcohol. The differences between grapes are massive, and every grape has its own characteristics that cannot help but permeate forward into the final product of a finished wine. And every grape also has its own story. Today, I want to do away with generalities, and instead I want to focus in on just one single grape. And if I'm going to pick just one grape to talk about, I want it to be a good one. I want to choose a grape that's got an interesting story, that has a fascinating, compelling, and distinct character, and also that has significance to the South Okanagan Valley, to the towns of Oliver and Osoyoos, and BC grape growing in general. And honestly, when I narrowed my search down by those criteria, it became obvious what I had to do this episode on. Today we're going to talk about one of the most well-loved grapes in British Columbia, and in fact, in the world. We're talking about a grape that has surged in popularity to become one of the top five most planted grapes globally, with over 470,000 acres of it across the planet. It is the subject of cult fascination. It is the source of myths and legends. It is the always assertive, always delicious Syrah. So in our discussion of Syrah today, let's start somewhere very approachable. What does Syrah taste like? Well, the answer is actually pretty easy to explain. In fact, Syrah is an invaluable wine for teaching people how to taste wine, because most Syrahs will show what we call typicity, which is, when you say it out loud, not an attractive word at all. But what it means is the typical flavor of the grape. The typicity. I'm going to stop saying that. Every grape has a typical flavor, but some of them are a little bit more broad or a little too similar to other grapes. So when you're teaching people how to taste wines blind and then identify what grape they are just based on what they're tasting, you want to choose grapes that are iconic and a little bit distinct from others. Syrah is perfect like that. On the nose, Syrah tends to bring forward a lot of fruit. Specifically dark berry fruit, that is to say, blackberries, blueberries, black currant. Sometimes there's a floral violet character. Then there is also the thing that makes Syrah so distinct, and that gets students of wine so excited when they taste a glass blind, and then they say, wait, I know what this is. I know it's Syrah because it's peppery. That's the big distinguishing characteristic of Syrah. This tone of ground black pepper. Sometimes it's a little bit more white pepper, sometimes it's a bit more peppercorn, but that pepperiness is almost always there. Syrah wines tend to be moderately to heavily oaked, and that means that you tend to also get smokiness in it. Now, the smokiness is, you could think of as artificially constructed, because if you didn't use oak barrels, it wouldn't be there. It's not native to the grape. However, the tendency to use medium to high levels of oak means that you can count on there being some smokiness in a lot of Syrahs. And what's more, the natural pepperiness of Syrah tends to combine together with the smokiness from the oak to synthesize together and create a new smell. And this synthesis smell tends to convey itself to the brain in such a way that people interpret it as meat, like bacon fat or smoked meat or charcuterie. It's very common for people to smell Syrah and come away thinking it smells like a farm board, that it smells like a bunch of smoked cut meats. smells good. Now, these are all the aromatics. This is primarily where the flavor comes in, through the nose. But then when you taste the wine, Syrah almost always is a full-bodied wine, meaning it feels rich and dense. Part of that is coming from a higher level of tannin. That high tannin, in turn, comes from the thick skins that Syrah have, but then they are also accentuated by the medium to high level of time in oak barrels. So you tend to get good levels of tannin, creating a robust, well-structured body, but Syrah has a nice balance to it because it also has a little bit of acidity. Some people can be surprised by that, especially when they're trying a BC Syrah, that there tends to be this little hint of, well, it's freshness. Acid doesn't need to taste sour. And in the case of Syrah, the acid tends to present itself as a clean freshness, like drinking blueberry juice. It's like you can taste the antioxidants. And on the finish, after the wine has dissipated, you tend to get echoes of that pepperiness again, as well as some herbal or earthy aftershocks. And actually, that's a good time to bring up the fact that when I'm talking about a typical Syrah, it's maybe an unfair blanket to cast out because there's so many different places in the world that grow Syrah. British Columbia, yes, but as well the United States, Spain, Chile, South Africa, New Zealand, and probably most importantly, Australia and France. And so when we say what Syrah usually tastes like, there are common markers right there in the genetics of the grape that are going to persist no matter what terroir you put them in. But growing conditions do leave their impact. And it means that a New World Syrah, probably best characterized by Australia, your New World Syrah tends to be plumper, more fruit-driven, more peppery. You get these big, explosive fruit bomb Syrahs, full of pepper, full of fruit, maybe not actually that complicated of a wine, maybe doesn't actually have that cellaring potential, but tastes amazing and big and vibrant and explosively juicy right out of the gates. Whereas the Old World Syrah, primarily your French Syrah, they tend to lean a little bit higher into the acidity, and certainly a lot more earthy and herbal. Old World Syrah tends to give more rosemary and thyme, and that combination of pepper and smoke on the nose that a New World Syrah might wear as a piece of prosciutto. An Old World Syrah might take those aromatics and instead make them smell like charcoal or olives. Olives are actually a pretty common thing to recognize in Old World Syrah, but not something you see very often in New World Syrah. By the way, if you're tasting a bottle of Syrah and you're looking for all these things, it's worth noting that when you're actually serving the wine, Syrah has, whether it's New World or Old World, one of the highest recommended serving temperatures out of all wine. Very, very briefly here, I'll go into the chart of serving temperatures from coldest to warmest. It is recommended that you serve sparkling wines or very light, clean white wines at their coldest, which would be between sort of 3 and 7 degrees Celsius. And then your full-bodied white wines, your richer Chardonnays, that is to say, or your rosés, you serve those between, say, 7 and 12 degrees Celsius. Then you get into your light red wines, which would be your sort of 12 to 14 degrees Celsius. Your medium-bodied red wines would be your sort of 14 to 16 degrees Celsius. And then you get to your bold red wines, would be maybe your 17 degrees Celsius or 18 degrees. And that is where Syrah stands. They say that the optimal temperature for Syrah is 18 degrees Celsius. This is room temperature for a lot of North American houses, which I guess makes it easy, but it also does make you realize that perhaps most of your bottles of wine should be a little bit colder than you expected. If you don't want to worry about chilling your wine, and you're concerned about not knowing exactly what temperature to serve a certain type of wine at, just drink Syrah. Now, I needed to do that little tangent because I think it's interesting, but the problem is that I completely undermined my own efforts to create a very smooth transition into the next segment that I want to talk about. You see, I was going to say, this is what a New World Syrah tastes like, and this is what an Old World Syrah tastes like. And speaking of the Old World, how about we start at 5000 BC? Ah! The segue was going to be a lot better before I started talking about serving temperatures. You see, I want to go back now to the origins of the Syrah grape. Because Syrah is a really interesting one. It has stories upon stories upon stories about where it came from and how it was brought into the light of the world. And so to learn about modern Syrah, we first have to go all the way back to 5000 BC. Except we actually can't yet, because I need to tell you something else first. So hold on to this expert segue, we'll get back to it in a second. Because first I have to address the elephant in the room. What is Syrah called? Answer seems easy. It's called Syrah. I keep calling it Syrah. The name of the episode is Syrah. But would everybody agree with you? Or would some people call it Shiraz? Yes, the most commonly asked question that I ever field about Syrah is, are Syrah and Shiraz the same thing? And they are. Easy answer. Syrah and Shiraz are the exact same grape, but Syrah goes by many names. It's sometimes called Hermitage. It's sometimes called Marsan Noir. Sometimes it's called Syrac. But most commonly, it is known as either Syrah or Shiraz. There is a grape called Petit Syrah, which isn't Syrah, so you don't need to care about that. But the names Syrah and Shiraz are often used interchangeably in New World wine regions. In British Columbia, for example, you can buy a bottle of Syrah at one winery and then drive down the road and buy a bottle of Shiraz at another, and they might even be the exact same genetic clone. I will, I promise, explain more about the name Shiraz a little later, but for now we're going to zip back to my amazing segue. We're going to say, oh, New World Syrah tastes like this, and Old World Syrah tastes like this, and speaking of Old World, it doesn't get older world than 5000 BC, actually 5400 BC. Just technically even older. We begin in a different Shiraz. This Shiraz is a city. The city of Shiraz in Persia was historically known for making some of the finest wine in the world. They made two wines, specifically. They made a dry wine with a lot of stem contact and high tannin, and then they made a sweet nutty wine that was designed for aging. By the old world method, these wines were named after the city and not after any grape. Keep in mind that here in British Columbia, we might call a wine Gamay Noir after the grape that it's made of, but in France, it would be called Beaujolais after the region that it comes from. And in that fashion, the first two Shiraz wines were the wines that were made in Shiraz. There's a legend from the region of a girl who sought the affection of the king and was spurned. The girl, distraught, decided to end her own life by eating spoiled grapes, but instead fell unconscious and awoke the next morning with the first hangover. Upon revealing her findings to the king, wine was invented and the girl was greatly rewarded. This story is probably not what we would describe as true, but a creation myth like this is interesting to look at because the oldest records of grape wine fermentation are from about 6000 BC in Georgia. The earliest records of Persian grape wine were, like I said, 5400 BC. So Persian wine was some of the oldest in the world that we know of. And so a creation myth about Persian wine is kind of a creation myth about wine in general. Just to give you a frame of comparison, France's grape wine production seems to have started around the 500s BC, so a good 5,000 years later than Persia. The city of Shiraz was known for centuries as a hub of culture, of music, of poetry, and of wine. However, these vineyards that are now in present-day Iran, after Persia was renamed back in 1935, these vineyards are no longer harvested for wine production, because in 1979, Iran instated a prohibition forbidding its Muslim citizens from drinking alcohol, which also meant the closure of all the national wineries. This is, of course, a bit of a tragedy, because it means that now we cannot appreciate this traditional Shiraz wine. We cannot taste it today. Another tragedy is how much time I've just wasted, because the Shiraz wine from ancient Persia has absolutely nothing to do with the Syrah grape in any way. They are utterly distinct and completely unrelated. In fact, the classical Shiraz wine was white. There was a dry white and a sweet white. And ampelographically speaking, ampelography is the identification of grapevines. If you didn't recognize that word, you could be forgiven. ampelographically speaking, the grapes that were grown in Persia are utterly unrelated to Syrah. When I started working in the wine industry and I started working with Syrah, there were these stories about it. People said, nobody knows where Syrah comes from. People said, we think maybe it came from the Middle East. It was a source of great mystery and intrigue. But it turns out, it's actually just not that mysterious. In fact, Syrah just comes from France, which is about as boring an answer as you can expect. There is another myth that a crusading knight discovered a magnificent grape while in the Middle East and brought it home. Not true. There are myths that the Basque people of the Pyrenees Mountains traded for the grape from the Persians and then brought them down the mountainside to France. No, not true. It's just from France. Genetically, Syrah is descended from two almost unknown grapes that only exist in the southeast of France and that have now gone almost totally extinct. And Syrah itself was just a field mutation in the way that so many other great grapes have been. Just a chance, accidental cross-pollination between two grapes that nobody cares about anymore. Syrah seems to have originated in France in the 1700s, down in the southeast area around the Rhone Valley. And while many other regions of France were making blends in the time, the northern Rhone Valley used Syrah to, in some ways, pioneer a single varietal method, pure Syrah, nothing else, that was not very common at the time. Specifically, the town of Hermitage was the one that brought Syrah to the world stage. And that is very significant for the next chapter in Syrah's history, because 100-odd years later, in 1832, a very important man named James Busby came for a visit to France to get vine clippings. You see, he wanted to bring them back to his home nation to propagate fine European vinifera grapevines, and Syrah was one of the grapes that he was after. James Busby seems to be, by all accounts, a clever and long-sighted man who had a keen vision of the future and terrible handwriting. In his journal, James recorded the grape as Skyrus, we think. Seems to have been written S-C-Y-R-A-S. And so when he brought the grape back to his home, they used the name Skyrus for a while. Eventually, though, they started calling it Hermitage, named after the town where Syrah was most popularized. Of course, the French appellation system came along in the 1980s and caused such a litigious stink that, well, nobody else in the world was allowed to use the word Hermitage except for the town of Hermitage itself. So at that point, James Busby's people changed the name again. Instead of calling the grape Skyrus, instead of calling it Hermitage, and certainly instead of calling it just Syrah, which is its actual name, they seem to have called it something else that they read in James's notes from 150 years earlier. You see, amongst James Busby's failings were not just his sloppy handwriting, but also a lack of rigor when it came to fact-checking. And it is written in James Busby's journal that he once read a book that identified that the Syrah grape had come from Shiraz, brought down by one of the hermits of the mountain. Again, we touch back on the myths and legends that had propagated about where Syrah came from. That seemed good enough for James Busby's people. If the grape came from Shiraz at one point, surely it would only be just and honorable to call it that name again. And so it was that James Busby's people, the Australians, started calling Syrah Shiraz. And from that day forward, everybody was confused. The introduction of Syrah to British Columbia is a little more easily tracked, although not without its hiccups. The earliest emergence of Syrah in France was, of course, in the 1700s. The oldest planting in Australia was 1843, and is actually still at a producing winery. That's Langmuir Winery in Barossa, 1843. In British Columbia, 1991. Possibly 1990. We think 1991. It was only 1.3 acres that were first planted. In the last 30 years, it has grown and grown until now there are 550 acres planted. It makes up about 10% of all the red grapes in British Columbia, and it is the number 5 most planted red wine grape behind Merlot, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Cabernet Franc. It is the 9th most planted grape overall between whites and reds, although it's the 4th most planted grape overall, whites and reds, in a Soyuz, where some would argue that Syrah grows to its finest potential. It is a fantastic grape, and people have heralded that Syrah should be BC's signature red. So then why is it only the 5th most planted red, and the 9th most planted grape overall? 550 acres is not really that much. And so if people are so enthusiastic about Syrah, if people believe in Syrah so much, if it's becoming so big in the world, and if there's such a market demand for Syrah, which, let me tell you, there is, why aren't we doing more of it here? Well, we have to zip back to those first plantings again. You see, in the 1990s, Agriculture Canada only allowed 2 different clones of Syrah into the country. I've discussed this before in the podcast, but grapes naturally mutate, they change, and people take cuttings of these different mutations, and these are basically called clones. No grape is just the grape. There's always factors and conditions and baggage that comes along with it. Merlot clone 181 is very different than Merlot clone 347. And there are scores and scores of these clones that float around on the international market. But in the 90s, after NAFTA, when the Canadian governments were really encouraging grape growers to punch above their stature, to produce higher quality products, they wanted growers to be able to bring vinifera in and achieve these standards of fine wine, but they needed to be cautious of the spread of perceived diseases or viruses that might travel in on certain clones. It was because of the fear of viral contagion that Agriculture Canada deemed only 2 clones of Syrah to be safe to bring into the country. Those were clones 99 and 100. Now, it is true that clones 99 and 100 did not seem to be prone to the types of diseases or viruses that Agriculture Canada was worried about. And so the growers planted them, they cultivated them, they harvested the grapes, they made Syrah wine, and life was good for about a decade. But around the year 2000, grape growers started to notice a decline in their Syrah. It started to lose productivity. It became weaker and more prone to disease. And eventually, many of the Syrah plantings became so compromised that they had to be ripped out and replanted, which is a devastating backward step for a vineyard to take. But it seems that something we didn't know in the early 90s, something Agriculture Canada didn't know, something that the grape growers didn't know, is that clones 99 and 100 of Syrah are host to a genetic defect. Not a disease or a virus that could be screened against, but something invisible living inside of those grapevines that causes them to effectively start self-destructing after 10 years. Specifically, what happens is, after a decade, this genetic defect prevents the sap from returning to the roots, which makes the plant a lot less resistant to the cold and a lot less productive. It also makes it more disease-prone, and it doesn't happen all at once right away. It just means an annual reduction in vigor as the grape produces less and less and less, and requires more and more and more work to produce reasonable results. Lucky for us, Agriculture Canada no longer restricts Syrah imports to just those 2 clones. We can get other, healthier clones of Syrah now, and many grape growers have done so, ripping up their clones 99 and 100 and replacing them with more long-term sustainable crops. But it's no stretch to say that the weaknesses in those original cuttings have inhibited the growth of Syrah over the last 3 decades. That one of the reasons that BC Syrah is not more widely grown is because of the difficulties that were provincially associated with that grape. In fact, Syrah was number 4 on the list until it was overtaken by Cab Franc within the last 10 years. Lucky for us, though, even with the complications in its past, there is no shortage of Syrah coming from all over a Soyuz wine country. Let me name just a couple of the wineries in our area that produce Syrah, all of them well worth seeking out. Let's see if after you listen to this podcast, you can go out and you can find a bottle of Syrah from each of these locations. We'll go alphabetical here and start with Adega on 45th, Bartier Brothers, Black Hills, Blue Sky, Border Town, Burrowing Owl, C.C. Yench, Church and State, Desert Hills, Gold Hill, Hester Creek, Jackson Triggs, Kismet, Lakeside Cellars, Maverick, Moon Cursor, Inkameep Cellars, Nostalgia, Phantom Creek, Platinum Bench, Road 13, Rust Wine Co. Second Chapter. It's 23 wineries. If you are going to go try to find a bottle of Syrah from each of those locations, that is two cases of wine right there. That is 23 wineries. Out of the 36 wineries in our area, 23 of them produce Syrah. And I know I'm biased, but I have not tasted a single Syrah from any of these sources that has been a letdown either. If you get those two cases of wine, I promise you'll be satisfied with them. But before we finish today, I do just want to highlight two wines from that list. Moon Cursor and C.C. Yench. Let's start with Moon Cursor Vineyards. Located on Highway 3 on the east side of Osoyoos, just behind Inkmeep Cellars, Adega on 45th, and Lakeside Cellars. Moon Cursor is a staple of the Osoyoos wine scene. They are well-established, well-loved, and in 2019 they actually brought home the distinction of Best Small Winery in Canada from the Wine Align National Canadian Wine Awards. Moon Cursor knocks it out of the park every time. They have a fantastic group of staff who are talented, knowledgeable, and friendly, and they produce some of the best wine, well, according to the Wine Line National Wine Awards, in the entire country, bursting with flavor and texture and personality. They produce some very unique grapes, things like Tempranillo, Torriga Nacional, Dolcetto, Carmenere, grapes that are rare to see in British Columbia. But it's their Syrah that I want to highlight today, and they actually have two of them. The Contraband Syrah retails for about $37, and it's restricted to their wine club, which is well worth being a part of. But they also have a publicly accessible Syrah, simply called Syrah, that is a genuinely fantastic wine, a gold medal winner, and it only costs $29. Syrah is almost always priced at 30 plus. $35 is a very common number to see for Syrah. But the Moon Cursor Syrah, currently the 2019 vintage, is coming in under the 30 mark, which is an incredible deal for the value. In terms of the profile, both of the Moon Cursor Syrah show off the savory side, with leather and smoke and wood all intermingling with the lush dark fruit that, you know, you still expect to see from the grape. 2019 was a great growing season in the Okanagan, and the Moon Cursor 2019 Syrah is a perfect example of why. If you have a chance to get your hands on that wine in particular, it is well worth the effort. Next, I want to talk about C.C. Yench Cellars, another highway winery, as most of them are in the Okanagan. C.C. Yench is found about halfway between Oliver and Osoyoos on Highway 97. They're just south of Road 13, which of course is the home of Road 13 Vineyards, and they're just north of Road 16, where you can find Rust Wine Co. C.C. Yench is another must-visit winery, named for the founder Chris Yench and his wife Betty. Now, quite sadly, Chris passed away earlier this year, and everybody in the wine industry was quite devastated to hear it. But the winery and the wine shop are still operating, they are still open, and they are currently offering one of the best Syrah bundles in British Columbia. You see, wine vintages come and go, of course. A wine comes along, it gains reputation, it gains momentum, and then it sells out, and we eagerly await the next vintage to hope that it will do as well as its predecessor. The current vintage of C.C. Yench Syrah is 2018. It is a very good wine, and we should be happy that this is the current vintage that we have. It is a worthy successor to the previous vintages. But the marvelous thing about what C.C. Yench is doing right now is that they are not just offering us the 2018. They have opened up their library, their cellar, and they are offering Syrah for sale from 2012 through to 2016. The only year that's missing there is 2017, but you can buy 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 18. And every single one of these are all priced the same at $32, which is amazing. The appreciation in value as a good wine ages in the cellar is worth a lot more than what they're charging for it. In particular, let's just highlight one of those wines, one of those library wines, and let's talk about the 2016 Syrah. The 2016 CC Inch Syrah was a competition darling. It won gold, 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 double gold, platinum at the Lieutenant Governor's Awards, and the distinction of Best Syrah at the Okanagan Wine Festival in 2020. Add to that the fact that it has a 94-point rating through Decanter, and you have, genuinely, one of the most decorated wines in BC that is currently available to buy. Even though its vintage is technically past, 2018 is the new vintage, you can still get this 2016 Syrah in all of its glory, and you can get the wines that preceded it, and the wine that succeeded it. Six wines, a neat even half a case, $32 a pop, a little slice of Okanagan history that really shows off as well the beautiful richness of Syrah. The CC Inch Syrahs are habitually juicy, earthy, complex. They all receive more than a year of barrel age, which helps them develop excellent texture and balance with tons and tons of dark fruit flavors and spice. They are commonly blended together between both Golden Mile and Black Sage vineyards. So kind of the best is being extracted from both sides of the valley to blend together and create something that, honestly, there's no excuse for you not to pick up a bottle of. So there you go. Two wineries that I wanted to just highlight there, Moon Cursor and CC Inch, both producing amazing award-winning Syrah, both at fantastic prices, and both representing just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what British Columbia has to offer in terms of Syrah. In the 2015 Judgment of British Columbia, Stephen Spurrier, acclaimed British wine critic, joined international critics in coming to Canada and comparing British Columbia wines to those of France, Australia, the United States, New Zealand, and South Africa. This was a big deal. BC hosted this competition to prove that British Columbia could stack up to international wines in a blind tasting from exacting judges from all over the world. Two grapes were chosen to compare, Chardonnay and Syrah. In the Syrah category, out of the 12 wines that were blindly judged by international critics, BC Syrah snagged 3 of the top 5 spots. And the number one wine of the day, what was judged to be the best Syrah between all of these countries, was a BC Syrah. In fact, it was the CC Inch 2013 Syrah, which I will remind you, is currently available for sale again. It ranked above wines from Barossa in Australia. It ranked above wines from the Rhone Valley in France. And after the judgment, Stephen Spurrier himself said that BC Syrah was, quote, attracting justified attention, end quote. Which we all know is a British wine critic's version of gushingly high praise. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Uncork the Sun today with me. To learn more about the Syrah-laden vineyards of Oliver Assoyous Wine Country, you just have to visit www.oliverassoyous.com. Thank you to everybody who's been watching our live virtual Vinstitute broadcasts. We have put the current season on hold, on vacation, while people travel, and we'll be resuming the virtual Vinstitute tastings in the fall. If you want to keep abreast of when we're going to be returning, just keep watching the Oliver Assoyous Wine Country Facebook page or check in on the hashtag UncorkTheSun. All the previous episodes that we've done are still available to watch on Facebook or on the Oliver Assoyous Wine Country YouTube channel. The mini episode that I just did last week actually focused on Syrah. I tasted one Syrah. It was the Black Hills Syrah and an absolutely magnificent wine. So if you like listening to me describe wines to you, you can check that out. This podcast is a collaboration between Oliver Assoyous Wine Country and the Vinstitute Wine School and is released on the first Tuesday of every month. If you have any questions about wine, about winemaking, feel free to email me at moss@vinstitute.ca. The music for this episode was provided by Olav. To hear more of his work, visit olav.bandcamp.com. The host has been me, Moss Sherkogel, and I want to remind you that if you spell Syrah backwards, you get the word Harris, which I thought was going to sound like something else. Never mind. Whether you're experiencing the beauty of Oliver Assoy's wine country from the comfort of your home, or whether you're planning a trip here for the future, we cannot wait to raise a glass with you and uncork the sun together.